talked about how in the last episode that Dave Haxtell was maybe one game away from being fired.
Yes.
And wouldn't you know it, he's fired now.
Yep.
He is gone.
Gritty is the new head coach.
Gritty is the new, actually, I think Scott Gordon is his name.
That's a nice nickname.
I know. I think that's his full name. Like, he asked that people stop referring to him as Gritty from a coaching standpoint and just call him Scott Gordon, you know? His real name. No.
Yes.
Scott, okay. So, this is a Canucks Sharks podcast. This is the Van Jose podcast presented by Fear the Finn. I'm Locke in the Crease. That's Nora Scali. But we need to start with the Flyers because they made a significant coaching change, and partially because the Canucks just completely dismantled them on Saturday.
So
this does tie in. This does completely tie in.
We're not too far off. We're not too far off the path.
So Scott Gordon is the new coach of the Flyers. Essentially, is he coming as the original coach of the Leigh Valley Phantoms? Is that how I pronounce it?
I know it's Leigh Valley, Lehigh.
Leigh Valley. I have no idea, honestly.
AAHL affiliate.
Somebody from Pennsylvania, please correct us. Thank you. Either way, but he has coached in the past, and the last team from my understanding that he coached for was the New York Islanders, and that was during the season where the Islanders ran with six different goaltenders, and I want to pull that up because there's another Canuck tie to that one.
Is there really? See,
yes.
Was that 2010? When was that?
That would be. Evgeny Nabokov, I believe, was one of the goalies. There's the Sharks tie-in. Your Sharks tie-in. I believe one of those goalies was Evgeny Nabokov. So let's see if I can get his coaching resume up here. Scott Gordon. Anyway, while I look for this up, let's talk about the fact that Haxtell is gone. Like, what are your thoughts?
It was going to happen. It was going to happen. It made sense. He hasn't done anything with that team in the three, almost a half seasons that he's been with the team. He has a very strong resume from, you know, the NCAA standpoint with North Dakota, I believe. And, you know, won a few championships with them, I think. Or at least got to some Frozen Fours. Definitely some NHL players came through that program. It's just he took the step. He took a step into the NHL and just didn't pay off with the stacked lineup that he has. I'm not going to deny that the Flyers don't have their weaknesses. They have struggled with goaltending a bit in recent years. But, you know, if you have Claude Giroux, Wayne Simmonds, it's a stacked team that has made, two playoff appearances under him.
Yeah, the first one was against the Capitals. They lost, I think, in six games.
Yeah.
And then last season where they got
also
lost in six games. The interesting thing is that in both of those cases, from a technical standpoint, they were close. Like, they were both close series, but if you actually go in and look at the scores, you realize, oh, no. These were not close in any way.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, every loss was, like, every Flyers loss was a blowout or something.
Pretty much, essentially, yeah.
In most of those cases. And, all right, so I do have the, so Scott Gordon, when he coached the Islanders last from 2008 to 2011, when he was fired mid-season, replaced by Jack Capuano.
Mm-hmm.
But in 2010-2011, this is the depth chart of goaltending. For the goalie played the most games was Rick DiPietro with 26 games. I think this is the second week in a row we've mentioned Rick DiPietro.
That might be too much Rick. That might be too much mentioning of Rick.
There's no such thing as too much Rick DiPietro unless he's playing in goal. Then there is too much.
There's too much.
All right, and then tied for second in games played, we have Al Montoya, the big Cubano,
Yes.
And Dwayne Rolison.
Where is he now?
Retired. He was old, man.
Yeah, he was real old.
Well, he got traded midway through that season to Tampa Bay and took them to the conference finals against Boston. I remember that.
Yeah.
Because Dwayne Rolison comes up in the clutch whenever he gets traded, like, midseason. Because that was what happened. That's how he ended up in Edmonton, too. He got traded to Minnesota to the Oilers. And then the Oilers went to the Cup Finals, and then he got hurt in Game 1 of the Finals. And I think they would have won. Can we talk about that? I feel like the Oilers would have won the Stanley Cup had he not gotten hurt in Game 1 against Carolina.
Probably.
That is my hot take. That's a hot take I will stand with, is that the Oilers absolutely would have won the Stanley Cup had he not gotten hurt.
I can side with you on that.
I mean, they ran with, what, Ty Conklin for the rest of that game, and he, the rest of game one in 06, and he ended up coughing up the puck with a minute left right to a waiting Hurricane for the winning goal.
Yes.
And then they went with UC Markkanen, I think, for the rest of the series, which is, he was incredibly good for the third string goaltender coming into a Stanley Cup final.
He was, yeah, cold. Underrated.
But, I mean, no Dwayne Rolison.
No.
That's asking a lot. Okay. And then, okay, but back on track here. Tied for, I guess, fourth officially, fourth, would be Kevin Poulin, which I don't know where he's gone. I remember that name. And Nathan Lawson with 10 games played as well. Nathan Lawson had a goals against average of .893 in those 10 games.
What?
Rick DiPietro in his 26 had a goals against average of .886, which is even worse.
What? That's absurd.
That is, it was a bad time. It was a really bad time for the Islanders. And then finally, with the goalie number six, now the current starting goaltender for the Edmonton Oilers, Mikko Koskinen, with 4 games played and a save percentage of .873.
Oh. Well.
Good for him. He's come a long way.
Good for him.
He's really worked for this. It's been a rough go that year. Either way, Gordon's now coming into a scenario where he is once again is playing on a team that's had 6 goaltenders play for them this season.
Yep.
So I think that's the most, like, of all time. Like, I don't think anyone, like, I think it's literally only those 2 teams that have had that many goaltenders play for their team.
I think if you need more than that in a season, you might just have to forfeit the rest of the season at that point.
Yeah, you might have a problem that's unfixable regardless. I mean, Brian Elliott apparently was doing all right when he got hurt. Like, a lot of this is just because of the fact that Brian Elliott's hurt.
Yeah.
Like, there's literally no other reason why there have been other reasons why, but, I mean, if he doesn't get hurt, how does Dave Hakstol still have a job?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so. Honestly, I mean, no, Brian Elliott, he has been, like, a bit streaky historically and can be inconsistent. I think Philly was a good fit for him versus Calgary, where he was prior.
Calgary is not a good fit for a streaky goaltender. Just ask Mike Smith.
Yeah.
They're mean.
Yeah.
They are mean to their goaltenders.
So I will stand by Mike Smith. I like Mike Smith. Mike Smith took the Arizona Coyotes to a Western Conference final.
Yes.
If you can do that, you're a good goaltender.
Yes, very true. Calgary is very, I would say Calgary as a fan base is particularly mean to their goalies.
They're harsh.
Because they have such high expectations because they got Mika freaking Kiprusoff for so many years.
Yeah.
That it set a really high bar for goaltending, as well as having, like, you know, Mike Vernon play in the past for the team.
Yeah.
So for a really long time, he was just a rock for them in net. So I think they've got really high expectations for good goaltending. And so now anytime anyone is only like semi-good or doing like just okay, they just tear that goalie to shreds.
Yeah.
I've seen so many people just rip Mike Smith online. It's like, just maybe don't. How about you don't? Maybe go focus somewhere else.
Exactly.
Yeah. And Brian, I think Dave Hackstall would still have a job. Frankly, just not because necessarily he had would have earned it, but just because of the fact that I think if Elliott was still healthy, they would have won like a couple extra games here and there. To the point where they would be in a better spot than what? I think they're dead last right now in the East, aren't they?
They might be. Jersey?
Jersey is behind them by 1 point. So they're about as close to dead last as you can get. So yeah. I think they would be in a better position right now had Elliott not been hurt. And we have spent 13 minutes on this. Or we spent a long time on this.
We spent a fair amount of time. I'm curious to see how the transition goes. With Scott Gordon, I thought they were going to immediately kind of shoot for Joel Quenneville there, but I guess they haven't even made contact. They haven't attempted to reach out to him, but that was my prediction that they were going to try to make that move.
Joel Quenneville was supposed to be the guy to come in. That was the belief anyway. I mean, I don't know if he's a good fit there, just because, like, as in Joel Quenneville is a guy who knows what he wants, and I don't think, particularly the way things are being run in Philadelphia right now, I don't think they could give him what he wanted.
Yeah. He sets visions and goals, and I can't imagine what a goal for the Philadelphia Flyers is right now.
Yeah. I mean, frankly, I don't know. Maybe, do they look at rebuilding a little bit, maybe? Or like
I feel like they
retool.
Have a decent, yeah, I just feel like they just have such a decent enough team that they shouldn't really need to rebuild. Maybe in some areas, I'm not saying,
I mean, but like in a lost season like this, like maybe you look at this as an opportunity to send some of your older guys who still have some value off for some picks. And like you keep obviously the younger guys like Travis Konechny and Sandheim. And Gostisbehere and Provorov, and you build around them instead of what they're building around these days, which is, I would say is Giroux and Voracek and maybe Gostisbehere, but I think Gostisbehere is young enough that, or not Gostisbehere, sorry, Couturier is what I meant to say. Mm-hmm. I think Couturier is still young enough that he could, I think he could still be part of the solution for the most part, you know? Like, I'm not saying Giroux and Voracek are past their prime or anything. I'm saying, if anything,
you could trade for decent pieces.
Right now, they would be better served on a decent team, on a more decent team.
Yeah.
Like, maybe the Vancouver Canucks. No, I'm just kidding. We're not trading for... We're not... No, they're not in the market to trade for a Giroux or a Voracek.
I guess
What if he ended up in, like, Columbus again? Jacob Voracek back in Columbus? That'd be pretty funny. For Panarin! There's a trade.
Panarin to the Canucks?
No. Panarin to the Philly? Flyers. The Flyers for Giroux and Voracek.
That could be a trade.
That could be something. I'd probably be a bad trade. But still,
it'd
like a bad trade for the Blue Jackets, but still,
yeah,
it'd be an interesting one for sure. Either way, speaking of trade rumors, I think it's time we move on to the Canucks, because one of the rumors that was floated, I think, on Saturday during Hockey Night in Canada was the fact that the Canucks are apparently targeting, Andrei Burakovsky. On the
really?
Capitals. Yes.
I have not heard that rumor. Do elaborate, please. Okay, what pieces would you have to give? What would you have to give to get him?
That is the thing with the Andrei Burakovsky rumor. Essentially, Burakovsky is a Washington Capital who had a pretty good start to his career with the team. But over the last couple of years, his role has been diminished as other players have kind of beaten him taken over his spot, and injuries haven't helped as well. Right now he's played 29 games this season, has just 8 points. He's essentially But he's a young guy, so he's kind of a reclamation project, you know? He's a 23-year-old who, on the right team, could find his game again.
I think the Canucks could be that team. I mean,
The Canucks absolutely could be that team. The problem I see with getting Burakovsky is what is the price?
Yeah, what's the price tag on him?
Because the Capitals are where they are as a franchise, I find it hard to believe that they would want anything more than a roster. They would want a roster player coming back in that trade.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And a young roster player, because they're giving up a 23-year-old. They're going to want a guy who's
within closer, that age
more
range.
Not in his prime. Yeah. More not in that. Yeah. And those are exactly the kinds of players the Canucks should not be giving up.
Oh, definitely not.
So, you know, unless I don't know how they would swing this. I mean, I guess I don't really see a scenario where the Canucks would be willing to part with any of the players, any player that the Capitals would want.
What about maybe you don't think like a Nikolai Goldobin?
I don't want.
Maybe?
Oh no, I don't want the Canucks giving up a Goldobin. He's working on that top six. I wouldn't give him up.
You don't think
I think if anyone, and this is the one that, like, frankly, this would be the hardest to swing because he's hurt, but maybe you look at a guy like a Sven Berchi or something.
Okay.
Because he's a little, you're at the very least, when he's healthy, the Capitals know what they're getting from him, which is kind of what they're going to want. They're going to want to, the reason why Burakovsky's on the market in the first place is because he hasn't put up the points, and he hasn't been the sure scorer that they'd hoped. Whereas with a guy like Berchi, you know what you're getting out of him when he's healthy. And I think that's the sort of thing that they're looking for. They're not going to want another question mark. They're going to want somebody who they know for sure will put up this amount of points over this amount of time.
Okay.
Whereas with the Canucks, they can take on a guy like Burakovsky, a question mark like Burakovsky right now, because, hey, we're not supposed to be good. Might as well take on some guys whose value has dropped and see if they can fit and see if they can find a fit here. Especially because with the Canucks, they've tied up a lot of money with older guys right now, so they need to give up somebody who they need to give up a player out of the lineup who to take some of that cap space with them. Maybe the Capitals would be willing to bring back Jay Beagle.
Jay Beagle, yeah.
That'd be funny. I don't think they would go for that. I don't think they would be like, sure, we'll give you this 23-year-old guy, this 23-year-old with a lot of potential for 33-year-old Jay Beagle. But either way, I would love to see Burakovsky in a Canuck uniform, and if it does happen, awesome. I just think the asking price is probably going to be too rich for the Canucks to pay. And to the point where if they did pull the trigger on that trade, I would be skeptical as to... I think I'd end up not being too happy with the trade, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, the Canucks, up until, you know, the Lightning, they'd won two in a row, and before that they'd run, what, four or five in a row? They're looking better.
It's been a good go for the Canucks.
And the last 10 games are definitely turning around a bit.
Aside from that the Lightning game, and even then, the Lightning game, they looked good. They weren't, like, they weren't out of that game at any point. Like, until, like, the last, like, minute. Until, like, the last, like, 2 minutes of the game when the empty netter hit the... Or when the Steven Stamkos shot, I guess, I would say was the nail in the coffin, was the 4-2 goal. With like 2 minutes remaining, that was a bad goal, especially because like Enwick's coming up on that like right side. Anders Nilsson, who had a really good game, he has to have that last puck. That's the make or break. That was that short. That's those moments where you need your goalie to come up with the save, and he just didn't. And that was a big, that deflated any chance of the Canucks coming back in that game.
Listeners, Lachlan here had some choice words about Coach John Cooper of the Tampa Bay Lightning prior to us recording. If he wants to do a more PG.
I'm,
PG-13 version of that.
Yes, commentary. Please. Okay, so for anyone, for a lot of you, for anyone who didn't watch the Canucks Lightning game, which I'm sure is a good amount of you, essentially in the second period, I don't even remember his name because again, this man, as I said before, this player is completely unimportant and irrelevant. Martel. All I know is his last name is Martel. I'm gonna get his full name up in a second. Anyway, essentially, second period, he lands a high hit on Troy Stecher. Totally dirty, reckless hit. Like up, it's an elbow straight to the head of Stecher. He's down, and he leaves the game, and now he's in concussion protocol. Like if you fast forward to today, he's in concussion protocol. Essentially, the referees decide, oh, this is a high hit, but we're going to only give Danik Martel, that's his full name, a two-minute penalty for elbowing, because of course. And sure enough, the Canucks are pissed for very good reason, or completely pissed. They get the power play. Power play expires. Martel comes out of the box. And Jake Virtanen makes a beeline for him after the whistle and starts wailing on him. Then Erik Gudbranson jumps in and he sucker punches Martel from behind. And I mean, it was a solid hit. I don't approve of fighting in the game as far as like, you know, just fighting is concerned. But in that particular case, I'm like, nope, good job. You did good a good job. Go for it, Gudbranson. Let's go. it's one of those things of as long as it's in the game, yeah, I'm happy that the Canucks went and stuck up for their player on a reckless hit like that, sort of thing. I'm glad the Canucks took matters into their own hands when the referees didn't. And they took Martel down. But essentially, Martel gets back to the bench and cameras catch John Cooper, head coach of the Lightning, basically giving Martel a fist bump, which doesn't seem like much, but it's one of those things where when you look at the situation, essentially John Cooper is praising his player, or like, you know, giving his player props for injuring an opponent's player. And that to me is just garbage. That was worse, I would say, than the hit itself. Was just that fact that the coach was blatantly, like, rewarding his player for going out and taking out a young player defenseman on the Canucks. And that to me, that's garbage. You can't do that. You can't just give players, especially a guy like this guy who's only played like two games. And it's like you can't just praise them for reckless hitting. By the way, another thing I should add as well is after the game, he was questioned about the hit, and he basically said, "I didn't see it." He said, "I didn't see the hit."
The hit that he made.
John Cooper claimed he did not see the hit on Troy Stecher, even though let's count here. There are, I believe, two monitors on the bench for reviewing plays so you can challenge for review. So, and that there, not to mention the at least one tablet on the bench also for reviewing plays. And oh yeah, the giant Jumbotron at center ice, which definitely showed the play because you hear it in the background. You hear all the fans booing when the highlight comes up on the board. And so that made it even worse for me. That was like, okay, John Cooper, dude, you're sitting on a bench with at the very least three different cameras and views of the play, not to mention your own eyes and the scoreboard. Shut up. You are so, that to me, that was so full of crap. He is so full of crap. Like, you're not fooling anybody. You absolutely saw the play and you're just pretending and you're just deciding, oh, it's not that important to you, and you feel whatever. He feels like, oh, here's the thing. He knows it was wrong because he's trying to hide the fact that he knows it happened because don't lie to me. Don't tell me you didn't see it because you absolutely saw a highlight of it at least once in between when when the hit was made and when he got back to the bench and you gave him a fist bump. Don't give me that crap that you didn't see it, because you absolutely did. And that to me is just gutless, you know? I'm sorry, I'm very mad about that. That to me is, like, that's just crap. What are you doing?
I mean, that's a fair enough rant. I'm not upset about that rant. Stetcher, though,
Stetcher's in concussion protocol. He's probably going to be out for a while. And then, of course, NHL Department of Player Safety decides, oh, we're not gonna suspend
they're
this guy.
Review, he was just following,
blah, 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 shoulder on shoulder, even though, you know, his head whips around, which is one of the arguments they used against the Canucks a while back when one of our players got suspended for a high hit, to which was fair. Yeah, you don't hit the guy high. That's the problem I have with the Department of Player Safety, too often they're looking at the principal point of contact, which is important in context, but at the same time, it should be this whole thing of, you know, what is the end result? The end result, I feel, should be more important than what was the intent. I think the intent should come into play when you're talking, or like the point of contact should come into play when you're talking about the length of the suspension, but I don't think it should come into play when you're talking about, was this a high hit? When you're coming down to, is this a suspendable offense or not, it should be, was this hit high? Yes. Okay, this is a suspension then. Then when you go into the logistics of, was this reckless, was there intent, was it reckless, where's the principal point of contact, then that from there is where you start crafting how long a suspension should be, you know?
I guess going off the injuries for the Canucks, you have another guy who's done for the season.
Done for the season? Do we have a guy done for the year? Oh, yeah, Ulevi. That's right. Ulevi has been playing for the Comets this season.
Yeah.
He had injured his knee. I forget which game it was that he had, that there was no, that he hurt his knee in during this season. He came to Vancouver, did some workouts with it to try and see if they assumed it would not need surgery, but I guess that changed over the last week or so, and he underwent knee surgery. He'll be out until, at the very least, training camp in September of 2019.
Wow.
That's a huge blow. Not necessarily because they were going to use Ulevi at any point this season, but simply because he was making great strides at the AHL level, and this is one of those injuries that not only sets you back for your development-wise, it sets you back career-wise.
Yeah. Like, it's hard to come back from that sometimes.
Not a lot of guys reach their potential after having knee surgery. Like, you know, it's one of those injuries that kind of lingers. Like, it's because you can just never put as, like, you know, you're a little bit, partially it's in the person's head because, you know, it's, you know, you're scared to put a little bit of that little bit of added pressure onto your leg. I mean, hockey players in themselves and athletes in general are a little bit different mentally than you and me.
Yeah.
As far as professional athletes go. But at the same time, there is always that little bit of fear in the back of your head of, oh, if I put too much pressure on this, I might tear it again. And it's one of those, and it's not something you can really work out of your system because you're just, you know, you remember that pain of what happened the last time you put that much pressure on it and it got hurt and you hurt yourself. But a lot of it is, of course, just the body, you know, it can't take the same pressure that it used to be able to. Once you've had that repairing, that surgery and everything, you know?
Yeah.
There's those particular injuries where, you know, no matter what happens, it just never seems to go away. You know, like for goalies, it's the groin injury. Once you injure your groin, you're going to injure it numerous times over and over again for the rest of your life, for the rest
Pretty
of your
much.
Career.
It's a guarantee.
Like Luongo hurt, Roberto Luongo injured his, had a major groin injury, I believe, in 2008. And I remember that because I met him while he was hurt. either way, and, you know, every now and then he's back on the IR, not partially because he's, you know, an older guy now, but also just because that groin keeps flaring up and because, you know, it's just never able to fully heal. And a knee injury is one of those kinds of injuries. I would put kind of that group of, like, you know, concussions, groin injuries, and knee injuries, kind of in that category of, you know, parts of the human body that just, once they're hurt, are never the same, are never able to come back the same way. So I'm worried with Ulevi as to how that'll affect him. He's a younger guy, but so maybe it won't be too bad, but at the very least, it's going to be trouble for him.
Looking ahead, the Canucks tonight play the Blues. Jets on Saturday. Jets on Saturday, Oilers Thursday, and then next Saturday you got the Flames. What?
You said the Jets beat the loss to the Kings.
I believe they did. The Jets.
All right. Canucks are going to win their next 3 in a row. Let's do this.
Yeah, the Jets beat the Red Hot Lightning 4-5 in overtime, and then followed that up that was on Sunday. Then on Tuesday, 4-1 loss to the Los Angeles retirement homies.
The Los Angeles oldies.
Yeah. Sharks got them today.
I mean, that's pretty, that's bad. I don't know. With Winnipeg, they've kind of had the Canucks number over the last little bit, so I don't expect, and I don't really expect that to change.
Okay.
I mean, if right now, Blues tonight, the Canucks are going to win, for sure. If they don't, they should be disappointed. You know, and again, that's one of those things where, you know, I know I've said that a lot this season, just because the season's been so weird, but in general, generally speaking, there are not a lot of teams I would look at, and the Canucks, I would say, the Canucks absolutely need to beat, just because, you know, they shouldn't be, they're not as good as they're not as good as a lot of teams, but right now, as far as the Canucks are concerned, I would say that when they play the Blues, they absolutely should win every time. Same thing went for the Flyers game on Saturday, which the Canucks were phenomenal in. Like, they were incredible. They had one of their best games of the season, I would say. Edmonton as well. They beat the Oilers 3-2 in a game where they looked really good. I mean, that was crazy. The fact that they came out of that weekend with the Flyers and the Oilers winning both of them was incredible.
That was awesome.
Back to back. Yeah, the Canucks are on a roll right now. Like, don't let the Lightning game fool you. The Canucks are playing probably their best hockey of the season, and that's including some of the other runs they've been on this year. They're playing their most consistent hockey. They're routinely outplaying their opponents, and like particularly with the Lightning game, it was simply a matter of the Lightning are just more talented than the Canucks are, and they mm-hmm. were able to overcome that victory. Against a lesser team, I think the Canucks would have won. You know, it's just a matter of the Lightning or the Lightning. That's a tough team to beat.
Regardless,
that's going to be that's a hard team to beat. Regardless, Winnipeg, I would put in the same kind of boat. I feel like the Canucks could come out of there with a really good effort and outplay Winnipeg. But the Jets are just stacked to the point where if they lost, I wouldn't be surprised. But with games like the Blues and even like I would even say the Oilers and the Devils, I think they play on New Year's Eve. Those are games the Canucks should win. I think those are the games that the Canucks will go in and they will absolutely, they need to win those.
Yeah.
Yeah. With the Oilers, I think the best part about the Oilers game, of course, was the fact that we can finally put to rest the fact that Elias Pettersson is obviously better than Connor McDavid.
Yeah, I saw that. Saw some of that on Twitter.
I think the best part about that whole exchange and that whole joke is how many Oilers fans took it so seriously.
Oh yeah, you that upset. Was so there's fun. Definitely some upset ones on the internet.
The Oilers, oh, the Oilers fans, they're so fun. I would just like to say for the record to anyone who hasn't heard it, who hasn't been paying attention, when Canucks fans say they think Elias Pettersson is better than Connor McDavid, 99.9% of the time, they're joking, okay? We're kidding. We don't actually believe that. I feel like I need to clarify that because so many Oilers fans were so pissed about it on Sunday. And then when Connor went out and got his assist in like the final like 3 minutes of the game, they're like, there it is. It's Connor McDavid. He's better. He's the best. It's like, chill. Just settle down. We don't actually believe that. Even though Elias Pettersson had 2 points that night. Boom. Mm-hmm. Including the game-winning goal, if I do remember correctly. That's it's just so fun. It's just so fun to, and the Canucks are fun again. And that's the important takeaway I have right now, is that the Canucks are fun again, and it's great. And regardless of what happens with the rest of the season, I've been thoroughly entertained this year. And that is so, and that's new from the last 2 years. So I am really excited.
I guess we can transition with the Sharks, because they're playing their most consistent hockey as well. They are fun to watch. The Sharks are
also fun again.
And they are so much fun again. It took them a while.
5 wins in a row is not easy to do. It's never easy, but the fact that they've done it against some good teams is worth something. Is worth something extra, you know?
I think they might be 7-3 in their last 10, maybe, is my prediction that I'm not looking up correctly.
Yeah, 7-3. They have won 7 of their last 10, 5 in a row, and they're finally starting to kick it into high gear.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize this. The Sharks' record at home is identical to the Calgary Flames at 11 wins, 3 losses, and 2 OT losses. I didn't realize the Sharks were doing so well at home.
I guess I wasn't really paying attention to that either, but I just feel like we've been on the road so much. I guess I just don't appreciate the home games when we have them. I just constantly feel like the Sharks are out and about somewhere. But they took 2 on the road this week with the Blackhawks in Chicago, 7-3. Followed that up in Minnesota, 4-0.
That Chicago game,
that was just twists and turns. It started off really rough.
That was something. That was a barn burner.
Yeah.
7-3. So I remember I wasn't immediately paying attention to the game. I had something else I was working on at the time. And I remember just seeing, "Oh, there's a goal. There's a Chicago goal. That's not good. Oh, there's another Chicago goal. That can't be good either. Oh, the Sharks have tied it up in like 2 minutes. Okay. Oh no, Chicago's got the lead again."
Yeah,
it was one of those weird games where it's just like at the very beginning it looked like it was going to be slightly close. Which was scary as hell. And then all of a sudden, part of that is the fact that they had to put in Cam Ward. That kind of sealed their fate a little bit.
Yeah, we had.
I would say that was Chicago's doom right there. Was the minute the minute Corey Crawford got hurt and they had to throw in Cam Ward.
And say, well,
there's your W. Let's do this. Let's go home, everybody.
Jones had a really rough start with 3 goals on 4 shots, I believe.
Did he play the Minnesota game?
He did. That's his 20th career shutout.
He got a redemption night. That was
he did. Shut out against a pretty good Wild team, I'm not going to deny. 4-0 win.
Minnesota is Minnesota. I would put them in the same kind of group as Dallas, as a team that kind of looks like they're supposed to be better and then never is.
Yeah.
But either way, I mean, they're ahead of the Canucks, so, you know, they're doing all right.
4-0. I think Erik Karlsson is on like a 6-game point streak with assists, I believe.
Good. Finally. Finally, everyone will shut up about Erik Karlsson being over the hill and everything. Yeah. That was annoying. I've gotten so tired of that.
I'm really happy I don't have to hear about, what if we had Chris Tierney still? We don't, and that's okay.
Shut up.
Be quiet. We have Erik Karlsson.
Chris Tierney is better than Erik Karlsson. Go away. He has 23 points. He has snuck up to top 6. Excuse me. Nice. Good for him.
2 I'm goals, really happy to see
21
that.
21 assists is insane.
Yeah.
I mean, Brent Burns is 30. But, you know, I would still say, like that whole just the fact of how many assists the defensemen have is pretty impressive, especially since, you know, from watching the Canucks over the last 3 years, defensive scoring is it, let me just
it's
tell
an
you,
art.
Sharks fans.
It's an art.
Sharks fans, let me just give you a moment, okay? I'm gonna tell you something right now, okay? So the Vancouver Canucks for the last couple years have run with a basic defensive core of, let's see, of Troy Stetcher, who is pretty darn good, has trouble getting points, but he's good. He's a good guy. You can count on him. He's reliable. Alex Edler, older guy, reliable. Chris Tanev doesn't get a lot of points, except lately had a beautiful goal against the Flyers where he just dangled everybody, and that was insane.
In rare form.
I think that was the opening goal, too. That was amazing. But he's not a guy who gets you a lot of points. Other than that, it's been Eric Goodbranson, Ben Hutton, Derek Pouliot on occasion, and then sometimes you get the occasional Alex Biega coming into the lineup, and I think he's playing tonight against the Blues. Either way, I just want you guys to understand that the the amount of scoring you guys get from the Sharks get from the defensemen, that is not normal
it's
in any
so
way, shape,
rare.
Or form.
It's so like, rare. And people, I think some of the fans are taking that for granted. They're just assuming.
Yeah, even in, like, you take Brent Burns out of that lineup, that's still us. Let's just say Brent Burns is hurt. That, the amount of points you're still getting out of that group is insane.
Exactly.
You take out Brent Burns' 30 assists, you're still looking at one of the best high-scoring defensive cores in the NHL. Do yourself a favor. Do not take this defensive group for granted when it comes to the scoring that they're able to put up, because, man, would other teams kill for it. Like,
exactly.
The Canucks last year, it took them forever to get even, like, I think, it took to, like, midway through the season for all of their defensemen to have even, like, a goal or something. It was ridiculous last year. I mean, a lot of that was injuries, but even then, like, the Canucks just don't have that kind of defensive, that group that can put up the points from the blue line anymore. They used to be able to when we had our main man Christian Ehrhoff running things and Dan Hamhuis in his prime. Dan Hamhuis, that was one of those trades that really backfired on the Sharks, huh? That Christian Ehrhoff.
A little bit, yeah.
Christian Ehrhoff for Patrick White and somebody else. I don't remember. That's either way. That Ehrhoff was Ehrhoff running the power play number one. Those were the good old days. Now we've got Ben Hutton running the show sometimes with Alex Edler. Hutton's had a good return year. Either way, the Sharks have done really one of the things the Sharks have going for them that not a lot of teams can say they can say the same is their ability to get points from their blue line. What Brent Burns does is. Is astronomical on its own, but the fact that even then you could take, like, even if he were hurt and you took all of his 30 assists out of the lineup and you still had guys scoring points like nobody's business, that is,
it's profound. It's amazing.
You don't take that for granted. Do yourself a favor, don't ever take that for granted, because man, is that hard to come by, and man, does that make the difference when it comes to the playoffs.
Yeah, the 4-0 win was awesome. Logan Couture, 2 goals, happy to see that. Hurdle with 2 assists. Radil, little rookie man, with 1 goal, 1 assist. Semek, 2 assists, and Pavelski with a goal.
Radil was really struggling at the AHL level, and now he's got a good chunk of points. He might just be, he might just be one of those guys that, he comes into the lineup and he comes into a bigger role and does better at the higher the role he plays, sort of thing. Like, some guys are just like that, where they don't, they don't look like they're going to be, they don't work out at one level, but for some reason you take them up to the next one, they do great.
Yeah. And then,
so it's good to see him contributing.
The Chicago game, that was actually a lot of points from, the secondary kind of players. Melker Karlsson, every fan's favorite player to hate and bash on. I'm not going to say I haven't taken part at times with the Melker Karlsson hate
train. I saw an article online where it was like about how Sharks fans have been ragging on poor Melker Karlsson. It's like,
it's understandable.
Yes. He also, hasn't been good enough, I'd say.
I
get it.
He actually had a goal and an assist in the win over Chicago. Kevin LeBanc, goal and assist. Justin Braun with an assist. Brendan Dillon with an assist. Barclay Goodrow with a goal. Lukáš Radil again with an assist. Marcus Sorensen with a goal. It's good to see those players kind of making themselves known.
Frankly, the issue I think a lot of people have with Melker Karlsson isn't necessarily because he's Melker Karlsson. It's just because there's Antti Suomela, who's not getting the opportunities that Melker Karlsson does, who arguably could do better.
Exactly.
If given that opportunity. It's one of those things where you've got to, like, where people aren't, people are technically, yes, directing their issues at Melker himself, I think a lot less of it has to do with that, with him specifically, and more of him being the figure of a mistake Peter DeBoer has made with his deployment on Suomela.
Yeah.
And now that the fact that Suomela is not even on the shark in the Sharks lineup, now he's in the Barracuda. Hopefully I'm going to get to go see him tomorrow night. But either way, he's just, it's just, you know, it. I don't hate Melker Carlson. I don't know enough about him, but just from what I've seen over the last little bit and what I know about Suomela, I look at that guy, I look at that and I say, oh, you might be, there's a good chance you'd be able to get more points and more wins, I guess, to an extent, to an by extension, out of a team running with him on the lineup versus a Melker Carlson.
That's kind of how I feel. I've always rooted for Melker Carlson. I think he's a good third, fourth line player. It's just we have these young guys waiting in the wings that have this speed and this talent, and I honestly think you take Melker out for a few games, throw those guys in, and you kind of see how that plays out, and I think you could get DeBoer could be pleasantly surprised with, you know, the drive that these Barracuda player have that we have that deserve an opportunity completely in my mind. And I enjoy Antti Suomela a lot. I think he's fast and he's smart. It's hard to break the Sharks lineup right now with how stacked of a team they are. But I wasn't displeased with him playing at the NHL level personally.
No, it really was a question of, it just seemed like the coaches didn't seem to, like, everyone liked Suomela. I didn't see, that's the big thing is, you know, with Suomela, I haven't seen one, issue. People didn't seem to have an issue with the way Suomela was playing except for the coaches.
Exactly. And it's their call at the end of the day, though, but
it is, and that's, well, that's, yeah, that is the problem, is the fact of, you know, a lot of other people would look at that and say, he should be in this lineup. They're not saying they don't like the other guy, they're just saying this is a guy who really could make a difference, but the coaches don't seem to see that.
Exactly.
And it's one of those things where you could, you know, whether or not a new coach coming in would make a difference is one thing.
Yeah.
I mean, like, well, a good example of where a coach did make a difference, though, right now is Ken Hitchcock and the way that he's brought up Jesse Puljujärvi, who really struggled to find any sort of, like, consistency under Todd McClellan's Oilers team. Now he's doing quite well. Now he seems to be finally hitting.
He kind of found his fit there, and
he's found a role. Hitchcock has found Puljujärvi a role, and it's one of those things of maybe a different coach. Suomela might be up there right now.
Nikolai Goldobin also, I think, is an example of that. Matt might also have been a bit a part
Goldobin
of.
Goldobin was a little bit different because
it was hard to crack that lineup. It was definitely there wasn't a place for
it
him.
It was
really
hard to crack. B, for a long time, Goldobin struggled to find a spot at the NHL level, regardless of who was coaching.
Yeah.
Like last season, Travis Green coached Goldie in the AHL with Utica. And he did a great job in Utica. He was a great fit on the Comets. And just under Willie Desjardins, never found a spot with the Canucks. When Travis Green got promoted to Canucks coach, he didn't find a spot that time either. Now this year, finally he's found a spot and he's doing really well. And Goldie is one of my favorite players on the team and he's doing a great job. I love you, Goldie. This is the Goldie appreciation
blog.
Podcast. Yeah, absolutely.
And then
either way, there's no guarantee that a coach change would change anything. But, you know, it's one of those things where I think Suomela could be getting a better opportunity than he is right now.
I agree with that. I'm not going to deny that. Looking ahead, Sharks have the Jets tonight, which should be a very interesting game. Big challenge. Could be a Western Conference Finals matchup,
Western Conference Finals. Oh, man. That would be amazing. But at the same time, I really don't want to cheer against Winnipeg. I like the Jets. I've always liked the Jets. They're great.
I agree.
They're the comeback. They're the comeback. They're the biggest comeback since Twinkies nearly died.
Oh, yeah. I almost forget. Twinkies were, discontinued for, a month and people thought the world
all
was
of two
ending.
Minutes
yeah
remember when people were selling Twinkie boxes online for $200 and then they came back a week later
And then...
Actually, that was kind of a thing that, to tie that back into hockey, there was this whole thing where the Canucks gave out, when the Sedins were retiring at the end of last season, they did two giveaway nights with the Henrik and Daniel Sedin bobbleheads, which I have, by the way. And the reason I have that...
That's going to be worth some money.
Because what happened was, a lot of people took their bobblehead, they were supposed to be for the giveaways for that game. For those two games, like near the end of the season. And so a lot of people put them online for big amounts of money, and people paid those big amounts of money. One of which was Canuck writer I follow. I forget who it was specifically, but I remember she was talking about how she dropped a bunch of money on eBay only for the Canucks to then make a bunch more and sell them at the team store.
Yep.
Like a week later. And that's how I got mine. I bought mine for like $20. And some people, I bought both of them for $20. And some people bought them for like, $200 or $300 on eBay. And now they sit next to my Gold Oban bobblehead.
And you're going to get the Martin Jones bobblehead. When is that? That soon?
That's against Ottawa. It's going to be a Guardians of the Galaxy Martin Jones bobblehead. I love it. And I think I'm going to the game on Saturday, just like the Barracuda game on Saturday, just as like a fan sort of thing with my grandparents because they're coming for Christmas. I thought I would bring them to a game because they love hockey.
Really? The Canadians like hockey? Like your Canadian grandparents?
Actually... One of them is my abuelita from Mexico, moved to Vancouver, loves hockey.
That's absolutely awesome.
Loves hockey. They used to have season tickets to the Vancouver Giants when they played at the Coliseum, but now that they play in Langley, it's too far. They went to like every home game for junior hockey home game for the Giants because they live like a 10-minute walk from the Coliseum. But they love, so yeah, she loves hockey. She watches every Canucks game. We're always talking about the World Juniors and everything, which are coming up
in Vancouver. Yeah. Very exciting.
Either way, yeah, it's one of those things that, and I think they're doing a Christmas bobblehead giveaway for the Barracuda that night.
Oh, that's cool. That'll be nice.
I think
it's
like John McCarthy and Joe Thornton on a bobblehead.
Oh, that's awesome, actually.
It is awesome. I'm totally excited to go snag one of those, hopefully. Either way, I think this is a good chance, like a test for the Sharks in terms of, you know.
Yeah, Jets.
They don't necessarily need to win every game, but they need to show that, you know, they need to be able to still keep hitting more. For every three wins, they need to get two. Is the way, you know, the Sharks should be looking at things right now. If they can just keep winning the majority of their games, yes, I know this is like a stupid way to phrase this, but just that idea of, you know, getting that one extra win every few games, it makes such a big difference. And the fact of, you know, with a team like the Sharks where consistency has been the name of the game, it's so crucial to make getting more of these extended runs do a lot for your confidence in the short term.
They do, definitely.
But then if all of a sudden you drop two in a row, all of a sudden it seems like the sky is falling and everyone's like, oh, are they done? Are they over? Blah, blah, blah. It's one of those things where, you know, in a way, winning a lot of games in a row is great, but sometimes it can be worse for your psyche.
It adds this pressure.
It adds the pressure. Yeah, exactly. So going and seeing them just, you know, not necessarily, they don't need to blow anyone away at this point. All they need to do is just win that extra game, win that third game, you know, instead of going 1-2, you go with the 2-1. It makes a world of difference for a team that has consistency issues.
And following the Jets, I mean, the Sharks have a real, like, their next five games are all within the Pacific Division, and that is huge for I just didn't think the division was going to be so tight as it is. So they got...
Yeah, that's the shock I just came to when I was looking at the standings is right now, if the playoffs started today, there would be five Pacific teams in the playoffs.
Exactly.
Which just came out of nowhere.
I was extremely surprised. I was looking at the standings and I was like, why is this so close and why did everybody decide to perform well recently?
What happened to the Central? Like, where'd y'all go?
They just kind of fell off the wagon a bit. I don't know.
Like, it looked very obviously like the Pacific Division It was there were going to be the three Pacific spots, and that's it. No one else from that division is going anywhere. But now, all of a sudden, you've got Calgary, San Jose, Anaheim, Vegas, and Edmonton all in a playoff spot.
That's absurd.
If you had to pick one of those teams to fall out, which one of those teams is it? Which team falls out? I say it's Anaheim.
I say Anaheim. I think they're relying so heavily on the goaltender. It's got to fall apart at some point, right?
Not only the goaltender, notoriously perennially injured goalie, yes. John Gibson. It's one of those things where, you know,
as and the their seasons backup is go, injured.
You know John Gibson is going to get hurt at some point.
Yeah.
And as soon as that happens, as much as I love Ryan Miller.
He's injured.
Is Ryan Miller hurt too?
Chad Johnson is their...
Oh, the Ducks are screwed. Okay.
Yeah.
if John Gibson goes down, they're screwed.
They claimed Chad Johnson off waivers, I think, last week or the week before.
Yep. If John Gibson goes down... Yeah, there's no way you're gonna. There's no way the Ducks are going anywhere. He deserves to win a Hart Trophy if they make it into the playoffs. Man, would John Gibson deserve a Hart Trophy? Absolutely would. I am such a proponent of goalies winning the Hart Trophy more often. Like last year, my vote went to Connor Hellebuck because I thought
phenomenal.
He did.
He was phenomenal.
Amazing for Winnipeg. And the fact that not only did he not win the Hart, I think the bigger travesty was that is that he didn't win the Vezina.
Yeah.
He lost to Pekka, and I was kind of like, okay, Pekka was very good last season.
He is a very good
sure.
goalie.
But without Connor Hellebuck, the Winnipeg Jets don't make the playoffs.
They don't.
Not because they're not a good team, simply because without him... They're the Flyers and don't get a stop at all.
Exactly.
get a stop at all. That was the whole issue with the Jets for a long time, is they probably would have been better a lot sooner had they just had one goalie who could stop the puck.
Yeah.
And Connor Hellebuck came in there. Not only did he stop the puck, he also stole a bunch of games last year for him, too.
Definitely. I mean, I'm excited for this game. It's going to be a really awesome matchup with the Sharks and the Jets. Patrick Laine is... Patrick Laine, and, you know, Pavs is on a hot streak. I want to see how the rookies do in a kind of a more competitive game.
This is going to be a playoff atmosphere game.
It's definitely
sure.
a playoff atmosphere game. And then looking ahead, Sharks have Kings, Coyotes, Ducks, Oilers, and Flames. Like, it's just Pacific Division matchup after Pacific Division matchup. And I
fun fact, the Canucks have played the most games in the NHL with 37.
Really?
That is both good. That is both interesting and not good, I would say.
So what Canucks...
Because they're still behind. They're still behind a lot of teams, despite having played more games.
Have you been voting for multiple Canucks for the All-Star game, or are you just sticking with
No, you can only
Patterson?
Vote for the captain. You
yeah.
can only vote for the captain of the division.
Have you been switching it up
I gave
at
to
all?
Elias.
You're just doing Patterson over and over? You're not switching it up?
In terms of the Pacific, yes. I've been voting entirely for Elias Pettersson.
Okay.
Because, no, No one deserves it quite like he does.
No, who's Connor McDavid? Who is he?
Who is Connor McDavid?
He is Erik Karlsson.
Who is Erik Karlsson? No, these scrubs wish they were Elias freaking Pettersson. Does Connor McDavid have his own church? I don't think so. That may or may not be a bad thing. I'm just kidding. I love I don't know if you've seen the Church of Pettersson Twitter account. They're hilarious. I love them. Every time Elias Pettersson gets a point, they read a scripture, and it's wonderful.
Another
a scripture from the Bible of Pettersson, and it's great. Even if you're not a Canucks fan, the Church of Pettersson is a must follow. Shout out the Church of Pettersson. Go find it on Twitter. It's great. It's great Twitter content. It's wholesome, it's wonderful, and it's just full of love, you know?
Great hockey-related Twitter content is Chad Johnson of the NFL, a.k.a. Chad Ochocinco.
CFL quarterback Chad Johnson.
Was he really in the CFL?
Yeah, he played for the Montreal Alouettes for like a year.
He did. And then
Anytime
that Chad Johnson... of the NHL, there's any Twitter update, Chad Ochocinco, like, they'll be like, it was like, Chad Johnson got claimed off waivers, and Chad Ochocinco will be like, oh, yes, I'm back in it. Like, it's just great. He's
I love
great.
It. That, they need to meet. They need to meet at some
they
point.
They need to meet.
They absolutely. Also good, Sven Berchi gave his, did like a baby reveal thing on the ice today. That was on Twitter.
Oh, true.
That was really cute. Congrats, Sven and Laura. Good, exciting. They're having a boy, I believe. Good for them.
That's awesome.
And also, did you see the video of Gritty just going around and like knocking over goalies dressed as Santa Claus?
That was great. But I saw the video.
I love that, man.
I saw the video of Tommy Hawk of the Chicago Blackhawks, like,
oh man,
beating up a fan.
Oh man, that okay.
Just a body slam.
NHL, if you're listening, All-Star Games in January. Please get a boxing ring and have Tommy Hawk versus Gritty. Put it on like pay-per-view or something.
I will spend money.
Oh, you will get, yes, you will get all of the views. Like, oh man, that'd be the fight. So one of the interesting things about that whole exchange is there's actually a little bit of controversy to it. Not just because obviously it's a mascot
body slamming,
semi wailing on a guy. Well, originally it was this idea that the guy attacked the mascot.
Okay. Like, I didn't know the full story. I just saw the video.
I don't know the full story myself either, but essentially, from my understanding, the original police filing talks about how the drunk fan unprovoked goes and attacks the Blackhawks mascot, Tommy Hawk. But, and not only does the video show it, but also, like, I guess there's some other bystanders. From what I've heard, apparently it was more in line with the fan was not the instigator. Essentially, the fan was trying to stop the mascot from running in, from like knocking in, like falling into a kid or something, or like about like accidentally like backing up into a kid.
Oh.
And the mascot may have taken it as aggression.
I started wailing
on him.
I love the NHL. The NHL is a beautiful thing. There is no sport like this.
No, it's not. Okay, I would say hockey. There's nothing like hockey.
There's nothing like hockey. The NHL
drives me bananas too often. Like, actually, I was having a conversation with friends in the car a couple days ago about how the NHL just straight up refuses to ever hire, like, whenever they do, like, their big name games and stuff like that. How they just straight up refuse to ever hire any sort of like musical guest
that's relevant
within like the last like 10 years.
I know.
Or even like 20 for that matter, because the NHL is run by a bunch of crusty old white guys.
You're not wrong. I think the NBA probably has it. Of the big four sports in North America, the NBA does it best. They do it the best.
I'm not a huge fan. I don't watch basketball at all, but the NBA.
They got their marketing down.
Such a phenomenal job marketing their players and their team and the teams. They do an excellent job.
They're doing it the best.
Part of that is because the players are more interesting as it is.
Yeah.
Part of that which helps so much.
I think
the NHL just has a hard time doing it. Like the whole thing, like during the Cup Finals this year, when Imagine Dragons did like that surprise set
before game two
of the Cup Finals, that was such a big deal because, oh my God, they got somebody who's actually relevant and who actually can make sense with the area because they're from Vegas to come and to play at the Stanley Cup Final. Like, that was a huge deal. And they never even done a musical act before a game before. And they set up they actually had somebody come in and make a party out of this big game. There's a reason why those finals were so exciting, were like one of the most watched of all time, because they did a good job like getting relevant people to come and show their sport, as well as the Knights just being the Knights.
Yeah.
But then you look back at like the All-Star game in Tampa, when it's like, all right, everybody, I hope you're excited. We got musical guest Kid Rock.
Yeah.
Oh, he's not even from Tampa. What are you doing?
I just remember that. Who wanted that? Who was like, oh yeah, Kid Rock. This is what the people want.
Old people. That's who.
I don't think I've heard
Kid freaking Rock.
I don't think I've heard a Kid Rock song in a decade.
Also, considering like, I'm pretty sure he's like considering the political land.
Exactly. That is
Kid Rock's political standpoint and whatnot. That was also just a bad
time. It was poor taste.
Timing wise. Like, Yeah, like, okay, you could have picked, you know, somebody who, you know, you could have picked hundreds of other people. Like, there are so many other better choices for that job, and they went with Kid Rock. That's why I have such, like, I have, you know, I'm hoping to go to the All-Star game in San Jose. I'm sure they're gonna just end up picking like Metallica or something, which isn't a bad call.
Metallica's awesome, but
Metallica's great. It's just, you know, it'd be nice to see somebody who's been popular in the last like 10 years or so to do something. Somebody relevant to this day, this era.
Exactly. But
they never do that. It's a struggle.
Imagine Dragons was a big deal.
Imagine Dragons was great.
That was a good play by Vegas in the NHL.
That was great. Either way, trying to think. Oh, Patrick Berglund got placed on waivers.
He was part of that big trade that sent Ryan O'Reilly to St. Louis.
So, partially that's... Okay, so here's my thinking, actually. I think I don't know a lot of people have thought about this, but this is kind of a blessing in disguise for Buffalo.
Yes,
in the sense of, like, Patrick Berglund was, I guess, from my understanding, he didn't want to live in Buffalo, which, yeah, I mean,
you're not wrong.
You're not wrong, but also, I mean, pick an original reason, why don't you? Either way, it was one of those things where he signed his contract with the Blues, and he didn't want to come play in Buffalo. But either way, he was making about, okay, according to Cap Friendly, he was making $3.85 million per.
Yeah.
Which is, I would say, more than Patrick Berglund is worth, as far as, you know.
Putting up the points, really, that he could.
Was I don't think he was, yeah, I don't think he was living up to that contract.
Yeah.
Buffalo was already in a cap crunch with or without him, him in the... So him not wanting to come to Buffalo just freed up some cap space for them that they really needed.
Yeah.
And I would say that, I say technically Buffalo gets, technically speaking, I would say Buffalo's getting the win here.
Do you think Patrick Berglund's going to end up somewhere? Somebody's going to pick him up? I mean, he's a decent enough player. I'd be surprised if somebody didn't express interest.
Yeah, he'll get picked up by somebody, especially now because he doesn't have a cap hit attached to him. Somebody's going to want him for something.
Yeah.
He's absolutely going to take a pay cut, take a pretty
decent
solid
pay cut,
I would imagine.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, I get, sure, Buffalo isn't glamorous, but I mean, they're winning. Come on. Why don't we want to play in Buffalo right now? That seems silly.
I'd rather play in Buffalo right now than St. Louis, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah, amen. It's just one of those things, I think, I mean, I would be surprised if he didn't find his way back to the NHL, like, right off the bat. It's he's just forfeiting a lot of money simply because he didn't want to live in this city in Buffalo, New York.
Yeah.
So, it's a risk. I mean, for the Sabres, this is a good, I would
definitely
say this
a blessing.
Ends up working. This is fine. This works out for them as things go.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they don't frankly need him. They're doing just fine without him. And I think that's pretty much it. I think that's pretty much it here, other than, wait, so let me get this straight. You have this written down on our notes here. Alex Ovechkin may have a shot at matching Wayne Gretzky in goals.
Yes, I looked this.
Is that a thing?
It is a thing. NHL.com just published a thing. If he plays at least 7 more seasons and he gets at least 30, maybe 35, 37 goals in each of those seasons, he will match Wayne Gretzky in goals. He's at 600-something. Wayne Gretzky's was, what, 8-something? 894?
Holy shit.
Oop, something like
I
that.
I swear. We're going to have to bleep that out. Or, actually, we have this list as explicit. That's not a big deal. Wow, that's crazy.
It's not impossible.
Oh, it's completely not impossible. I mean, he's hit 50 goals in nearly every single season he's played.
Yeah.
He's hit 30 goals at the very least in every season he's played. He's hit 50 in the majority of them, and And yeah, he's hit, I don't see, and right now he's already about to, he's one goal away from 30 this year.
Yeah.
In 33 games.
Dude doesn't
age.
He's
got 29. No. Oh man, he's tired. I mean, well, I wouldn't say he hasn't aged. I'd say he's definitely aged in the...
In the hair and the face.
In
yes.
the hair. He's got a silver mane now.
He's a silver fox. He's a silver fox.
He's a silver... silver fox. Either way, I mean... Oh, he came one goal... Man, he came one goal shy of 50 last season. That sucks. Either way, he's going to hit 50 probably this year, barring any sort of unforeseen injuries or what have you. He will probably hit 50, maybe even 60, if the season goes according to plan. Excuse me. Either way...
it'd be really awesome
cow,
that'd
to be see. Insane because I mean breaking a Wayne Gretzky record
unreal
is and this next to impossible
yeah
especially in today's hockey
yeah
era of hockey although right now scoring is at a is at an all-time high right yeah. now basically as far as this generation is concerned.
I'm definitely
NHL's been so weird this year.
It's been whack. It's just been, I love it but it's been weird.
Oh, yeah, the hockey this year, I would say, has been better than any season I've watched since before.
Yeah.
Like, this is some of the best hockey I've ever watched. Absolutely. The hockey's been great this year. And the way that things have just been so weird, like, in terms of the standings, in terms of the way games have played out, some teams showing up, other teams not. Just, like, everything has been fascinating this season.
I know. I love it. If you don't watch hockey, what are you doing? It's vastly superior.
If you're not watching, if you haven't watched hockey before, which I mean you probably have if you're listening to this podcast, you know it's one of those things of like if you're wanting to get your okay. A better way to put this, I guess, would be if you want to get your friends into hockey, now is the time.
Absolutely.
This is the season to do it. Absolutely. I feel bad for anyone who tried to get their friends into hockey back in like. It's like, hey man, you should watch hockey right now. The hockey's great. It's like, no, you said that in 2003, and I haven't watched since.
Now it's great.
It's boring.
The game is faster. People are scoring more, and environments at these arenas are just awesome. People are so excited to watch it. I think it is by far
the skull clap, baby.
The skull clap. You know, if you can have a good time at a Carolina Hurricanes game, think about that.
Brass bonanza.
Yeah.
I think they're doing the Whalers game soon, aren't they? They're going to do the game where they wear the Whalers uniforms again.
Those are sick.
Those are sick. I'm not sure how to feel about it simply because I would say it's a little weird wearing a uniform from a city
in
that
Connecticut.
You moved,
yeah.
That you left. Yeah, that you moved from. That seems kind of like, oh, maybe not.
Yeah.
Like one of those just like... The exception, if there wasn't, that being said, there was an exception to that rule, it's here. This
yeah.
is the one. I'm wearing those gorgeous Hartford Whalers jerseys that I absolutely want.
I know. I'm, like, trying to justify spending money on that.
Buy me one. maybe that's what I want if I win the
jersey
bet.
You want
maybe
the Hartford
Whalers.
Maybe
instead of you wearing a jersey, like a Canucks jersey or a Mighty Duck jersey to a game, I want a Hartford Whalers jersey.
A Sebastian Aho Hartford Whalers jersey.
Yeah, I guess I would have to go with, like, Aho or Teuvo Teravainen.
Yeah.
I don't know, because normally I would pick the goalie, but I don't really, I wouldn't say the goalies are my favorite on any of, I wouldn't say I'm all that high on any of the Hurricanes
yeah.
goalies these days. I don't really want a Peter Mrazek jersey.
What? Who doesn't want a Peter Mrazek jersey?
Reasons. There are reasons. Either way, you know.
Curtis McElhinney.
Curtis McElhinney. Ah, that guy. And then Scott Darling's in the minors right now.
Yeah.
If they got a more, I don't know. Maybe. I'd probably go with Aho. Aho
yeah.
would be a good choice. Either him or Teravainen or... Who's the other Hurricane that's done? Svechnikov.
Yep.
He hasn't done that. I think he's been on a bit of a cold streak lately, but either way.
It'd still be cool. Those jerseys are awesome.
Oh, for sure. And I think that's pretty much it for today. I think we've pretty much gotten through everything other than, you know, what are you doing for Christmas? What are your Christmas plans and whatnot?
I will be going to sunny Southern California for a few days, see some family.
Lovely.
It'd be nice to be able to go on the beach and then pretend it's Christmas. I mean, it is Christmas, but it just doesn't feel like it in any way.
Again, I told you this off the air last week. You just go to Disneyland. Just go to Disneyland. They make it snow.
Yeah.
After the fireworks show, you won't even be able to, it'll feel like a white Christmas, you know?
Yeah.
If you're going to get it anywhere in SoCal, it's Disney.
Maybe I'll see if...
Or at the Ducks Arena.
Yeah, maybe actually let me see if Anaheim's playing a game while I'm down there.
I if I remember the last time I looked, tickets are pretty cheap at Ducks, for Ducks games. And I'll bet they're not too, considering the talent, I wouldn't say they're probably too high. They're too expensive for Kings games either.
Well, they're off. I fly down the 23rd. They're okay. Oh, they play the 22nd, then they play again the 27th, and I leave. I mean, they're playing.
Oh, too bad.
Yeah.
Oh, you're literally just there for the freeze. For the freeze. Oh, that's too bad. As for me, I will be at home, probably working, not on Christmas Day anyway. Oh man, I'm really tired. had a long day yesterday. Either way, I'll be at home, spending Christmas with family, and then hopefully next week or two we'll be looking into doing a show in the same room or something. That'll be our Christmas present to you guys.
Yeah, it's not via the internet chat.
Nope, it'll be like in the same room, maybe even in a recording studio if we're feeling like being big spenders.
Maybe. Whoa. Well,
let's not go too crazy here. Yeah. At the very least, we're going to do an episode or two in the same room.
Yeah.
And I know we've been teasing that for a while, but I think next week is the week we're going to get that sorted out. Sure.
We're going to figure that. We're going to plan that.
All right. Well, since this is going to be the last time you hear from us until after the weekend. Merry Christmas, happy holidays.
Happy New Year.
We'll be back before the New Year. Yeah. We'll be back before the New Year for sure. We'll do the Van Jose Boxing Day Spectacular.
Yes.
The Boxing Day Special. Either way, we'll see you after hope your holidays are great. And, make time for your loved ones and everything.
Watch hockey.
Watch hockey. The World Juniors start on the 26th, and those are always fun. I'm actually really sad because we don't have cable anymore. We changed over to Hulu, right?
Oh, yeah,
Because it's cheaper than cable. NHL Network is the one that carries the World Juniors, and they're not on Hulu.
You'll hate to see it.
So I am really sad because I'm probably not going to be able to watch the World Juniors this year, which is going to kill me inside. I might just go to like a bar that has it or something and just go in there from the morning until
the next morning.
8 at night. Yeah, just to watch the World Juniors. Either way, we'll see you after the holidays. Yep. Merry Christmas, everybody. Happy holidays. And
listen and subscribe.
Have a safe holiday.